Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va Condovia, encima va Benzema, cuero para Asensio, Asensio para Vinicius, Vinicius la pone atrás, Benzema para gol, 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 gol.
Ahí estamos, ¿veis cómo nos hemos
alterado? Gol, 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 de Karim Benzema. Doble error de Cote. Primero perdió el balón, luego la filtró horrible, le pillaron en la salida. Buena pelota filtrada, balón para Vini, la pone Vini y Benzema de volea con la pierna derecha bate a Jan Oblak. Marca al Madrid, marca Messi, marca Karim, marca Benzema. Real Madrid 1, Atlético de Madrid 0.
Llegan los goles con el Santander.
Buenos días, buenas tardes, o indeed, buenas noches. As it is to the league title, welcome to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. I'm joined by Sam Leveridge, who is fresh from the Santiago Bernabeu, where Real Madrid perhaps sentenced La Liga with a 2-0 victory over Atletico. Has the doom and gloom worn off a little bit, Sam?
No, I've kind of been thawing out to warm myself up since I got back home, and I'm still not quite over the doom and gloom yet. It's not doom and gloom, perhaps that's a bit harsh on Real Madrid, but I mean, it feels a bit disappointing to think that there's such a clear winner of the league when we're not even at Christmas yet.
Yes, it is slightly anticlimactic. On the plus side, we should have a good European race, particularly the European spots. There is all sorts of chaos going on in the top half of the table below Real Madrid. We've got David Whitworth coming up to tell us about one of those battles. We've also got Paco Polit to tell us about Valencia's potential European shouts, but also more about kind of the off-field stuff. More on that later, as I'm sure we'll find out. Without sort of delaying too much, because I know this is the headline news that everybody wants to hear about, that everyone wants to hear us break down, so we will jump in to myself, Ruairi Barlow, discussing with Sam and Scott Martin about the Derby Madrileño, and here's how it all went down.
Felipe, midió mal Felipe, error tremendo, Vini, chuta, no, prefiero jugar para Sergio, chuta, Sergio. Y gol, 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 de Marco Asensio. Error de Felipe.
I'm joined by Scott Martin, one of the finest followers on Twitter for Real Madrid and author of a couple of books and soccer parenting handbook and also revitalizing Real Madrid. Scott, how are you doing?
Doing very well after that game. How are you doing today?
Not too bad, not too bad. It was a far more comfortable Madrid derby for yourself, I'm sure, than Sam Leveridge. Sam, how are you getting on?
Yeah, that wasn't fun at all.
short but sweet. So yeah, I'll jump straight into the game. First, I think I want to sort of just touch on both kind of points of view, because obviously you watch the game from a very different point of view if you're sort of more have your mindset on one team than the other. So, Scott, first of all, what did you kind of make of it from a Madridista point of view?
I do think it was interesting that both goals came in transition. Atletico stretched far too high up the pitch, and Ancelotti, who I think has really dialed it back to His previous spell at Real Madrid, making them a little more dangerous on the counterattack and a little more reliant on it for their goals. Mm-hmm. He's put it to good use today with this 2-0 win against Atletico. So both goals in transition. The second one very much against the run of play. That introduction of João Félix had given Atletico a little bit of life. But Real Madrid finding a way. And credit to not only to the goal scorers and to Vinicius for the two assists, but also just on the second goal in particular, the outlet pass from Modric to find Vinicius Jr. was just brilliant. So brilliant game from the Croatian. A lot of credit to him and just for the setup that Ancelotti had, especially, I think, setting Modric and Cruz deeper in the build-out to ensure that Real Madrid had that press resistance, that they were drawing Atletico Madrid higher up the pitch, and that created that little bit of space that he needed to give his superstars up top. So really well executed from Real Madrid's side.
Definitely. I think even though Real Madrid, as you say, it was kind of against the run of play, that second goal, it was almost as if Atleti, even when they did kind of come forward and they created a little bit, never truly felt dangerous to me. Sam, what did you make of the game from an Atleti point of view?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, kind of standing here, kind of listening to all of Scott's talk about Ancelotti's plan, about how everything kind of was executed perfectly. Real Madrid never got out of first gear, and Atletico didn't make them. I mean, Atleti just never got going. I think the first half against Porto midweek was disappointing, and this was kind of more a continuation of the same. Angel Correa in midfield didn't really convince me in the first half, and obviously changed it up at half time. But I mean, by 68 minutes, Atletico had already made all five of their substitutes, and Real Madrid had only made one. I think that's a kind of good illustration of Diego Simeone kind of running out of ideas. I mean, the team just, maybe uninspired is a harsh word, but they just didn't look like they had any ideas. They weren't adapting to the needs of the game. They weren't adapting to what Real Madrid were posing in terms of a threat. And I think really, I mean, that's where Real Madrid looked so comfortable. I mean, I don't think they ever got out first gear, but at no point did they ever look like they were likely to concede or likely to lose their lead. And I mean, I guess that's what a team of champions is. I mean, that's how Atletico played much for the start of last season, and that's how Real Madrid have been playing in the last few weeks.
Yeah, and you mentioned Correa's inability to sort of get a grip in the midfield. You briefly mentioned kind of Luka Modric's pass, Scott. Luka Modric, I saw him described as Godric. I heard monster class. There was all sorts of superlatives being thrown around. So, Scott, here's your chance. Wax lyrical.
You know, if 36 years old, dropped deeper in the formation to help against that Atletico Madrid high press, and the man still somehow finds a way to have a 90% pass completion rating and win 4 out of 5 dribbles. So I don't know how he does it. The man really is incredible. But I mean, I think that comfort that Sam alluded to, that was just a sign of the control Luka Modric had over this game. He never looked troubled. Atletico Madrid could press all they wanted, but they weren't taking the ball off of him. His decision making was spectacular, and you know, he provided that press resistance that was needed in the build out to help keep them safe, make sure that they weren't conceding any sloppy opportunities to Atletico Madrid, and he put a stamp on this game from start to finish. So we're running out of superlatives for this guy. You know, I've talked on Twitter in the past about how his deceleration and acceleration is a superpower. I mean, I don't know how this guy moves this well at this age, at this stage in his career, after all the minutes he's logged. So, I mean, he just once again has proven the doubters that he is the fixture in this midfield. You know, you can certainly make a claim for Casemiro, Cruz as the most important players, but everything Modric does is just such at such a level of class that You almost wonder what's going to happen at Real Madrid once he's gone. But phenomenal game today, and he really did control the tempo, and just the way Real Madrid carried themselves about in this match. And so credit to him for securing the victory, and I'd say he was easily the most influential player in this match.
Yeah, hard to disagree with you there. And from my point of view, Toni Kroos, Casemiro, great players, but Luka Modric is a player that you can really fall in love with when you're watching him. Sam, I don't know if you have it quite in you to wax lyrical about Luka Modric, but was there anything that either stood out to you about him or any of the other players on the pitch today?
It's hard to speak too many positives of Luka Modric right now, but I mean, the only thing I can say is that the Atleti fans were up in the away end at the Bernabeu, and there were quite a few things shouted at Real Madrid players. But I think the only positive one, if you can say positive, was there were one or two guys who just shouted at Modric, "Modric, come on, when are you going to retire? Come on, it's not fair." And I think that is kind of the ultimate mark of respect and admiration that you can get from rival fans.
Definitely. And cutting to sort of the big question after this match, Atleti now 13 points behind. There's an 8-point gap to Sevilla from Real Madrid. I Liga, Scott? Is this Real Madrid's league to throw away? Is there any way that Real Madrid don't win this league now?
Well, immediately after the match, I saw a tweet from Andy West showing that Real Madrid has beaten the teams rated second all the way through eighth so far this season. So the seven teams in contention for those top spots, they've already beaten. So this is very much Real Madrid's league to lose. Sevilla still does have a game in hand, so you know they can close that gap back to five. But this is Real Madrid's league, and I think this next month and a half with the chaotic league and cup schedule that they're going to have, that should go a long way towards to showing how much of a stranglehold they have on the league. But when you look at the teams they would expect to have to fend off, traditionally Barcelona and Atletico Madrid, they're so far off the pace, you can't really make the case that Real Madrid has to look over their shoulders for those two clubs at the moment. And the two nearest are Sevilla and Real Betis, which, again, these are clubs that are going to drop key points against the top half of the table. So, I never want to say the race is over midway through the season. Mm-hmm. But this is very much Real Madrid's league to lose.
It's a comfortable lead, certainly. Sam, is there any hope for Atleti? And if not, where does Atleti's season go from here? What are the aims? What are the targets?
No, I think the league is over. I think it's Real Madrid. I don't think anybody else has it in them to compete. Atletico, very disappointing to be where they are in the position they're in after how they did last season. But of course, I guess that's part of the challenge of defending a title, and Atletico have never been great at that. So, I mean, it is a hard one to see where Atletico go from here. I'd say maybe top four, the best they can in terms of challenging Real Madrid, but it's always going to be a challenge.
Definitely. Grim times for Cholo Simeone, just kind of 6 months after winning the league. Anyway, I shall draw our analysis of the Atleti Real Madrid match to a close, and thank you very much for your time, Scott.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
My thanks to Sam, of course, and Scott Martin. Do yourselves a favour, go on Twitter and follow him at Coach Scott Coffey, Scott with two T's on Twitter. Now we will move sort of across Spain to the east, to Valencia. And a big day in Valencia, not necessarily just for football reasons, as we heard from Paco Polit.
Well, I guess you only have to listen to the roaring of the fans and all of the chanting that we have over here in the background to try and get out Peter Lim out of Valencia. Over 15,000 fans were in attendance, according to estimations made by the police, which is more than double than what we saw back in May when around 6 or 7,000 marched on a parade asking Peter Lim to go home, to sell the club and leave the city. This march was organized by a large number of platforms, spearheaded by Libertad Valencia Club de Fútbol, which is the association built from the ground up in August 2020 by street-level fans who wanted to fight back after a wide range of examples of disrespect, both from Peter Lim and from his board of executives towards the fans, which caused the plummeting of the club from a mighty Champions League side back in 2019 to fighting to avoid relegation for two consecutive seasons. Libertad Valencia Club de Fútbol have also been fighting to collect 5% of the total number of Valencia shares in order to file suits and complaints towards Peter Lim for the mismanagement of the club, and actually they are on their way to reach the halfway mark of that quantity. Talking about the march, it began around noon last Saturday and saw how thousands of fans chanted against the management, against Peter Lim, and also against Valencia's current president, Anil Murti, who back in the day, and you might remember this, he told the Mestalla fans to shut up, you know, with his finger, during a game in their home ground when they were booing the people in the executive lounge. After around an hour and a half of marching, everyone gathered in front of the stadium and read a manifest in up to six languages, where they rejected how things are being handled and demanded that Peter Lim sells the club as soon as possible and leaves. And you can definitely say that the fans have finally awakened from the slumber, and after 7 years of Meriton driving the club to the ground, they won't stand it any longer. I actually believe that there are going to be many, many more demonstrations like this one in further months. And also, we have to say that the team was able to pull off a late win later in the evening against Elche with that mighty Pizzini strike, making it two wins in a row and getting Valencia closer to the fight for Europe. So I believe overall, Saturday, December 11th was pure happiness for Valencianistas, a date that few fans will ever forget.
My thanks to Paco Polit there. Always interesting on Valencia, whether that be on the pitch or off it. He did mention there a potential European challenge from Valencia and moving closer to the European spots. Two of the teams that are heavily involved in that European battle are Real Sociedad and Real Betis. They met at the Benito Villamarín on Sunday night, and David Whitworth was there to see it, so we were joined by him as he gave us his view on an emphatic victory for Los Béticos.
No es Verstappen, es Alex Moreno. Qué barbaridad, qué velocidad. Dentro del área le pega. Gol, gol, gol.
Bueno, bueno, qué partido.
Gol, 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 gol.
I'm joined by David Whitworth, who was at the Benito Villamarín to see the 4-0 drubbing of Real Sociedad by Real Betis. This was billed as a partidazo between two teams fighting for Europe. They're higher up in the table in the Champions League spots, and although they did have a helping hand from Alex Ramiro, who committed a terrible error early on to give Real Betis the lead, 4-0 is a pretty emphatic victory. Just how good were Betis?
Well, Betis were absolutely sublime against Real Sociedad with the 4-0 win. It was a tremendous performance against a very, very good team. Let's not be kidded by the scoreline. Real Sociedad are a very, very good team who will be fighting for a Champions League spot come the end of the season. So to produce a performance like Betis have is a lot of credit to the manager, to the players, to the staff, and to the supporters. The supporters really fed the team tonight. Certainly in the second half, you could see the team were feeding off the energy, the positivity of the crowd. And it was an incredible atmosphere to be part of, which I was. And over 52,000 were there, the majority celebrating a very special night for Betis. First half, though, Real Sociedad played very well. We got a lucky break with the goal, a big mistake by Alex Ramiro in the first goal, which really gave us a boost. But from the 20th minute onwards, Real certainly took control of the game. Didn't have really any clear-cut chances, but dominated possession. And Betis really needed half-time to just compose themselves and go again. But credit to the team, because a year ago, the team might have gone under in that first half, but they didn't. And they've improved immensely from a year ago. And that's, again, much credit to the defence. For instance, Marta Bartra has improved no end, and he's the back to the player that we signed originally. And certainly, once we got in at half time, and certainly again, the second goal came at a timely chance, because we were again on the back foot. But certainly, when that second goal in, it was a bitter blow for Real Sociedad, because they were knocking on the door, and that was the start of the absolute Betis destruction. And absolutely, every time the team came forward, they looked like they were going to score, and they played some marvellous football in the end.
There were plenty of good performances for Betis tonight, but one of the revelations during this La Liga season has to be Juanmi. 10 goals in the league now, perhaps the surprise of the season. Only Benzema has more goals than him. Did anyone in Seville see this coming? And can you, I think more importantly, can you see this hot streak continuing? Can this be a consistent thing for Juanmi throughout the season?
There were some big performances on the night. Alex Moreno, especially, for me, was the best player on the pitch. He's improved no end with Manuel Pellegrini. He was always a very good attacking defender, but now he's got an all-round game, and he's got an end product, as he's shown tonight, with two well-taken goals. Even the first goal was, even though it was an own goal, it was a very well-calculated pass into the goal. And then the second goal was a really, really confident finish from a confident player, and two assists, two goals. Great performance from him tonight. Fekir was outstanding. Once again, the beacon of light for this Betis team. But there is one person recently that's taken all the plaudits. He's even got his own Christmas themed jingle bells Juanmi song, and Juanmi is certainly giving Betis supporters all the best presents possible with some sublime performances this season. Hat-trick recently, a game-winning goal at the Camp Nou, another goal against Real Sociedad. He's performing the best he's ever played in his life. He's always been a very good player from the time with Malaga, funny enough, again with Manuel Pellegrini. Then he had a wretched spell of injuries, knocked his confidence, and we can now see the player that we signed a few years back. And 10 goals for the season already. He's fast approaching with 13, the best ever or in it for a season, and we're only halfway through the season pretty much. So he's definitely in that purple patch, or the green and white patch, and he's very much in the groove. The fans are absolutely delirious with the new hero at the moment. Who knows if he can continue until the end of the season in such a rich vein of form? I guess not, but we've just got to enjoy it while it lasts. But certainly he's proved that he was the player that we all knew was a great player when we signed him, and he's a likeable guy. Very modest, down to earth, works very, very hard to the team. Let's not forget just his goals. He's all around work play, knitting the play together, his assists, his silky skills on the ball. He's a very handy player to have, not just on the field, but off the field as well.
I guess the main question that's kind of on my mind now is that win has Betis third. They're just a point behind City rivals Sevilla in second. They also qualified from the Europa League group and recently went away to Camp Nou and won. We've spoken about their squad depth earlier in the season, but are they good enough to go on and to make top four this season?
That's a very good question with Betis and possibilities to be in the Champions League. It's been an incredible calendar year, probably the best in history. Very consistent, something, again, a buzzword that Betis have never had during the history. Full of downs, unfortunately, less ups. But consistency has been the buzzword this season. And up until recently, Betis were the best team in Europe in all the top five leagues in terms of wins and most points acclaimed. And if you'd have asked me maybe just two or three matches ago, I would have said to be in the Champions League positions at the end of the season was a tough ask. Right now, yes, but second half of the season, coming into the Europa League as well, teams around us, I would have said probably Europa League places, fifth and sixth would have been magnificent, because you have to earn the right to be in Europe every single season, and for a team that's not used to that, it's very difficult to maintain that Thursday Sunday scenario. So it's credit to the team that we've built a team, and not just a team but a full staff as well, that you can see week in week out we're making 8 or 9 changes, and it's the same Betis team in name that you're seeing, the same philosophy, identity, characteristics, and that's being shown by the consistency of the results as well, which in turn has given us this platform to build a winning machine and a winning mentality, which all stems from Manuel Pellegrini, the best signing of all that Betis have made in recent times. And after that Barcelona result, I saw the press conference afterwards with Andres Guardado, and he said, this team has been very consistent. The only thing that's been lacking is a big time result, and we got it tonight. That team, you can see now, fully believe in themselves that they can go to any place if they're on the game and win. And it shows, because tonight, once the team got to that 2-goal cushion, they never looked back, and they played some brilliant, brilliant football. And from an, if you look at it as a neutral point of view, they've got all the hallmarks of a team that are a team, they're a unit, they're well organized, lucky with no big injuries, full depth of squad. We've got the Europa League coming up in February, but that's parked now, so the team can fully focused on the league. And we've got every chance. Now, if you ask me, we've got every chance to be in those Champions League positions. We have to keep up this consistency, but to see the team already on 33 points is an astounding achievement from the turnaround of a year ago. We've proved now that we do mean business. We're not reliant on one player. Everybody's playing their part. The standout performances in each game, but the whole team are performing to their optimum level. And again, that comes back to the manager, the assistant, the coaching staff, to get the very best out of this well-talented team indeed.
My thanks to David Whitworth for his insight from the Benito Villamarín and a fiesta of a football match in Seville. We're going to take a quick break now, but don't go anywhere, because we still have plenty more to come on Momentazos, our MVP candidates, and most importantly, the best of the rest from Match Day 17.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
We are back, and as promised, we will break down all the rest of the results from this La Liga weekend.
We started on Friday night with a very windy 0-0 draw on the island as Mallorca drew with Celta Vigo. It was firecrackers after that as Espanyol beat Levante 4-3 at home in the sort of lunchtime kickoff on Saturday. It's a record 25 games unbeaten for Levante, a very unwanted one. Espanyol, on the other hand, ninth, 1 point behind Barcelona. They'll be happy with that. Alaves drew 1-1 with Getafe, a late Joselu goal. Stops Getafe getting the win, but it is 5 unbeaten for Kike Sanchez Flores' side. Following that, there was a win for Valencia at home to Elche. There's controversy in that, and it's not just the Paco Polit manifestation or demonstration, that was a very Spanglish term, that was part of that controversy. Following that, on Saturday night, Athletic went 1-0 down to Sevilla, went down 1-0 to Sevilla. It's 8 without a win for Marcelino now, and they're finding new ways to avoid scoring. Villarreal beat Rayo Vallecano, very importantly, in the lunchtime kickoff on Sunday. It's the first clean sheet since the 7th of November in La Liga for El Submarino Amarillo. Osasuna drew 2-2 with Barcelona. It's 2-2-2 for Xavi in his Barcelona spell. Osasuna, on the other hand, avoid defeat, but again, it's another game without a win at home. Then Real Betis, as we heard, beat Osasuna 4-0. Real Madrid 2-0, winners over Atleti, of course, and Cadiz face Granada in the Monday night game. Sam, I'll leave the floor to you. Where do you want to go first? Although I've got a particular game in mind that I imagine you're going to touch on.
Well, I think it has to be Espanyol Levante, right?
Definitely, definitely. What a game. What a game.
Yeah, what a game. And I think when in your intro you said that Levante had gone 25 games unbeaten, I think that's the parallel universe that Levante fans are dreaming of, because they've been woeful. I mean, this time I think you could tell that there had been changes. I mean, obviously the new coach has started to make an impact. I think that they played pretty well. I mean, pretty well in the context of how they've been playing of late. I mean, defensively they were still all over the shop, but they did begin at long last to look like they were a bit more cohesive, a bit more of a unit. They kind of all knew what they were doing, and Nelis Yoliski has kind of very much been on that wavelength. I mean, we've heard from Paco before that he's kind of come in, said to the players, look, I'm here to try and get this team play. I'm going to do the best I can, and kind of very down to earth. And I think that was kind of reflected in that performance. And if it wasn't for their defensive woes, then maybe they could be talking about a win. I mean, looking at the XG stats, I think it was Espanyol had 2.16 and Levante had 3.42. So for the result to be 4-3 is kind of typical Levante luck this season. But at the same time, all credit to Espanyol. I mean, prolific. I mean, we've spoken before with Jeff Drillingham about the talent that they have in attack, and it was really kind of on show. I mean, not just Raúl de Tomás, but they've got so much more. I mean, kind of Sergi Darde getting on the score sheet, Ángel Herrera getting an assist. I mean, it's a very strong squad that Espanyol have, and when things do kind of come together like they did on Saturday lunchtime, they look like maybe they could even kind of be pushing up towards those European places.
Definitely, and I think Levante, yeah, there were bits to like from Alessio Lisi's side, and they looked good going forward. One manager who has already made his impact, Kike Sanchez Flores, go away to Alaves, and although Alaves had a lot of the ball and they got that kind of late Joselu equaliser, Getafe again, they looked solid. Enes Unal scored another goal, which was unthinkable just a few months ago. Your views on kind of that and the Kike Sanchez revolution?
Yeah, I think Kike Sanchez Flores is doing a fantastic job at Getafe. I think at the moment he's still kind of conditioned by the squad and the players he has available. There's quite a few injuries as well within that team, and they're kind of rushing players back. I know that Kike Sanchez Flores spoke midweek about how Jakub Jankto, who was one of their best players in the first few weeks, is back training now, but he's playing through the pain barrier, having injections, that kind of thing. And that's kind of the situation that they're in. I think that's almost reflected as well because of the number of games where we're seeing them concede late goals. I mean, Sevilla and Atletico were two games early on in the season where they were ahead and then got pegged back and ended up being beaten. And then again, Joselu's goal came in the 86th minute. And I mean, Getafe do show that they are good enough to stay up and not even be in a relegation fight, but they just struggle to maintain that over 90 minutes. And Kike Sanchez Flores is getting there, but I think he still needs a bit more work, and I'm not sure where it will really come down to it is whether he can do that without bringing in fresh faces to the team.
Yes, and I think goal scoring is particularly, it was very well illustrated by the fact that I've called him Javi a couple times this season now. Jaime Mata missed a golden chance for Getafe to kind of seal this game, and then at the end of the game, Joselu scores. I think that's 8 goals out of 13 he scored for Alaves. For me, nobody more important than him to their team. Another team that really, really struggles with kind of scoring goals is Athletic, and we'll come back to the Valencia game in just a second, but Athletic, 8 without a win. Sevilla weren't good in this first half, but they still won.
Yeah, and Athletic are now up to 56 shots without a goal. I think the last 100 shots have had 2 goals, and one of them, of course, was the Basque derby where Alex Ramiro kind of put it on a plate, and there wasn't much to be done about that. But it must be incredibly infuriating if you're an Athletic fan. I mean, 2.12 XG, I mean, and they didn't score. I mean, Iker Maignan's chance just straight after the Sevilla goal was almost comical. It was almost more difficult to work out how it didn't end up in the back of the net. So, I mean, as an Athletic fan, I think you're going to be very frustrated. And, I mean, this was Marcelino's 38th game in charge. So, I mean, that would be a full La Liga season. I think looking back now, he'd probably be a little bit disappointed given how he started and the strong start. I think it's actually very similar to the guys get Garitano's last 38 games in charge. But he's kind of operating with one hand tied behind his back, and I think that was evident against Sevilla. I mean, everything was perfect. They just were missing that finisher to get on the end of the chance and put it in the back of the net. And Sevilla, a very severe performance. They weren't great at all. I mean, they were a bit sloppy in possession, but they just had that one moment, and then they set out to defend that. And Thomas Delaney's goal was a fantastic goal as well. A brilliant effort, and his first goal in 5 years, I think it was. So worth waiting for.
Yeah, it was almost tragically good that defensive Sevilla midfielder Thomas Delaney thumps one into the top corner while Athletic do all they can to hit the posts.
Yeah, Raul García, then Williams brothers, Iker Maignan. I mean, all in theory very prolific attacking players, but just not clinical enough.
Absolutely brutal. Do you think there's a solution to this? Are they going to kind of regress to the mean a bit? Or, I mean, they've only scored 13 goals. It's only Getafe who've scored less than them. Is anything going to change?
I think things will improve. I mean, you look at kind of, I think the standout one for me is Alex Belenguer, who was their top goal scorer last season. Mm-hmm. And he overperformed his XG by 2 or 3, I think, across the course of the season. And this year he's underperforming by 3 or 4. And I mean, that's the kind of switch that isn't going to kind of stand through a whole season. You would expect that to kind of return to the mean. But then I'm not sure it's going to be enough to make a real difference for Athletic. I think they are missing a striker. I think Raul García is only getting older. Neither of the Williams brothers is really a finisher. Iker Maignan isn't a finisher. Asier Villalibre isn't a prolific goal scorer. Neither is Sanset. So I mean, they just don't have that player in their squad. But again, with their Basque only transfer policy, they're a very limited pool to choose from, and I'm not sure there are any candidates that they could go for. So it's a very difficult one to see how Athletic come out of this situation and start finding goals again.
Very difficult indeed. There was a first goal in 3 years for Christian Piccini. emphatic finish, but it was the goal that never was for Elche that caused all the problems. Sam, explain.
Yeah, well, I mean, anybody who's been looking at the La Liga lowdown Twitter over the weekend, or even Matt Clark's Twitter, he's been showing every single angle of it. The ball, Guido Carrillo knocks it down, and Jesper Cillessen gets there to clear the ball, but there's some debate about whether the ball was over the line, on the line. Of course, no goal line technology in Spain. They rely on VAR for that. And this was one of those very, very, very rare cases where the VAR isn't definitive. The angle isn't quite in line with the goal, which is not the best idea, I suppose, if you're going to use it in that way. And different angles kind of show different things. From some angles, it looks like the ball is almost but not quite over the line. Another angle that Elche shared on their own social media after the game does make it look like it's over the line. And you can certainly see why Elche fans would be feeling aggrieved. I mean, this was just after Pacini's goal, so it would have been a 2-2 equaliser. And for a team like Elche, who are down there right at the bottom, I mean, 1 point is a big deal. I mean, at the moment, they're 3 points clear of the relegation zone, but who knows what might be the case come May. And we could be talking about these fine margins again, and the technology, which we know it exists. It's in operation in the Premier League and is used so effectively there. And in Spain, I mean, I guess you have to be fair to La Liga and say this is the first time that any case like this has come up ever since VAR started to be used. But for Elche, it's going to be a point of contention all season long, I think.
Somewhat bizarre that we spend so long looking at VAR, but we don't have goal line technology. As you say, it's kind of the first case of this, but certainly Elche will be making a case for the introduction of it after that. Moving on to Sunday's games, Villarreal 2, Rayo 0, Osasuna 2, Barcelona 2. Sam, is there anything that you particularly want to comment on from these stumbling European contenders, but a win for Villarreal?
Yeah, Villarreal, I thought, looked so much better with Gerard Moreno back in the team. I think he just kind of connects everything in attack, and I think that's what they've really been missing. They've had some good attacking players, and Dan Juma and players like that, that are very good on their own, but I think Gerard Moreno is kind of the linking point in attack. And it was kind of a very Villarreal of last season performance, if you like. It was kind of very dominant, very controlled, very comfortable. I think Rayo looked very much like Rayo have on the road this season, which hasn't been great. And obviously with no Falcao, not even on the bench this weekend. So I think they weren't quite as confident as they have been in other games. So it won't have been the toughest test that the Villarreal will have all season, but they did kind of make light work of it. I mean, Rayo had their chances as well. I mean, they could have got one or two goals, but I think Villarreal were quite assured in how they played.
And moving on to the game at El Sadar, anything stand out to you there? I mean, another collapse from Barcelona. Chimi Avila getting on the score sheet.
Yeah, I mean, what do you have to say about that, Rory? I mean, as the Barca fan, it must be a difficult one to watch.
Yes and no. I mean, it was very much the same. There wasn't anything particularly new about this match to me. I think the great addition was Ez Abde, who looked very, very good and sort of really pushed the team forward, along with Gabi and Nico, who linked up for the first Barcelona goal. And Xavi said it. It's difficult to digest, in his words, that the youngsters are the one pulling this team forward and pushing them through these kind of difficult situations. And why isn't it those senior players? Samuel Umtiti was in the side. He started for the first time since that infamous Granada game where Barcelona kind of ended their title hopes in the Camp Nou. He looked as flustered and, to be frank, useless as he has in the last couple of years. And yeah, it is depressing, but again, another situation where you kind of look at the team that Barcelona have. Luke de Jong was up front, and you think that this team is toothless. There aren't too many options to bring off the bench. Ferran Jutglà made his debut. Again, another sort of youngster coming through who's not even sort of a heralded youngster at this point. It's not someone that Barcelona have been thinking that he will come through and be a sort of star for them. It's just someone they signed for their B team almost. So yeah, if you kind of look at it in the context of those issues, then yeah, this was just the same. Credit to Osasuna, who pressured very well. I thought that they did very well to keep Barcelona kind of in their own half and penned in towards the end of the game. But once again, as Xavi pointed out, Barcelona, they need to defend with the ball. They need to be able to hold on to the ball in situations of pressure. They need to be brave. Having said that, I probably wouldn't have put Oscar Mingueza in midfield in order to do that, which was a strange decision, to say the least. We've already kind of... Sorry, on you go.
No, I was just going to say, I think Osasuna are actually very impressive. I mean, this was their eighth game without a win, but they certainly didn't look like a team that were coming off the back of seven La Liga matches without a win. I thought they looked very kind of comfortable on the ball and confident. I mean, they weren't afraid to kind of press back against Barcelona. I think they were the better team for much of the game as well. I mean, I think they just looked quite assured. And obviously, El Sadar is a big boost to kind of give them that belief. But I think they really kind of showed their belief, which we have seen at times this season. I mean, they've gone to Atletico and made it difficult for them. They've gone to the Bernabeu and made it difficult for Real Madrid, and this was kind of a similar kind of performance.
Yeah, and just on a more general note, this was an absolutely fantastic game. Really, really entertaining. There was lots of drama, well worth a watch, and go check out the highlights if you didn't or haven't already seen them. We've already touched on Betis' win, we've already touched on Real Madrid's victory over Atleti. So we can go straight into kind of the MVPs. I don't mind starting with that. I will sort of put out Luka Modric there. I mean, we talked to Scott about him earlier in the podcast. He's just majestic. There's sort of, he's getting to that point where there's not too much more to say about him, because we've seen it all before, other than the fact that he's 36 and he's still doing this. And it's incredible to see, and the Bernabeu, I think, was almost giving him a standing ovation a couple times in this match, which was, yeah, testament to his good performance. Who's your first pick, Sam?
I'm going with Alex Moreno. I think Real Betis were the best team performance of the weekend, and the best individual performance of that team was Alex Moreno. I mean, two goals and an assist from left back. I mean, that's the kind of thing we haven't seen much of in La Liga, basically, since Dani Alves was at his peak. And Alex Moreno is a player who's come in for criticism. I mean, he's not the most consistent. He's not the most defensively reliable at times. But when he gets going, he's unstoppable. And I think Real Sociedad, who are a very defensively solid team, I mean, they don't concede that many goals that often. So for them to be taken apart by a left-back playing like that, I mean, Alex Moreno is just so quick, so kind of brave in possession. I mean, he's not afraid to take a shot. He's not afraid to gamble on a cross or a pass in the final third. And he just kind of has that know-how and that courage in the final third, which really does help to set him apart.
Definitely. And for me, people will maybe perhaps accuse me of being a bit of a homer here, but it is a game I watched, and one player kind of stood out to me, and that was Eds Abde, who I kind of mentioned earlier. And I sort of remarked on Xavi's comments about how the youngsters are the ones pulling this team through, and Eds Abde, Dembele has been marketed as kind of the saviour of this Barcelona team, in the sense that he's a player of sort of supernatural talent that can come in and fix so many of Barcelona's attacking issues. But Abde was by far and away Barcelona's most dangerous player for me, in my view at least. He was sort of standing up the Osasuna players. He got two of them booked. He obviously scored the goal, which admittedly did come from a Dembele cross, but he was an absolute nightmare for Osasuna all game. And I think for someone who's only played a couple of games, to take on that responsibility to push this team forward and to really drag them through this, I thought it was pretty incredible performance from him, and from a player that, again, we've not necessarily seen that this is his, we've seen sort of his raw talent, but we've not kind of seen a performance this good from him. So to do it against Osasuna at El Sadar in a game where the team really needed him, fair play to him.
Yeah, it's going to take some convincing to convince me that Barcelona needed a player in this week, Rory, but I think you've done it with that sales pitch.
Who's your fourth and final candidate for the MVP?
I'm going to go with a player who I love. I loved watching him last season in particular, and that's Javi Puel. I think he got his first two goals of the season this weekend and was crucial for Espanyol, I mean, to see off Levante. I mean, his two goals were the two latest goals and the eventual winner. And he's been so promising. I mean, we've seen flashes of it this season, and he's kind of been, you can see him kind of adapting to Primera. I mean, he was very good in Segunda last season. I think he's been getting better and better this season in Primera. With each game, he looks a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more confident. And I think this was kind of the game where he really came out of his shell, and hopefully now we'll see him kick on even further. But he just looks so kind of like a striker who knows where the back of the net is, I guess, and to kind of be that player who comes from the wide positions and can chip in with goals when Espanyol also have Raúl de Tomás in there. I think that's such an important role for Vicente Moreno's team, and if he can get firing and get more goals, get more assists, get more involved in attack, then it's only a matter of time before we're talking about him and the Spain team and his future, because he's a huge talent, a lot of potential there, and it's really going to be interesting to see if he can build on his performance this weekend, which was excellent, and keep playing like that.
You could definitely kind of see why Vicente Moreno was still playing him, even though he perhaps wasn't getting the goals that he did this weekend. Moving on to moments of the week, I'll go first. I'm happy to do that, and it's one that comes with a little bit of melancholy for me. Karim Benzema's volley, you have to take your hats off to him. Vinicius again across, and it's that duo that are making the complete difference in this league. Benzema makes it look easy, pulls off from the defenders, volleys home, and that may well be that La Liga is on life support. And for Real Madrid fans, perhaps not so much for the two of us, but that's going to be an iconic moment, I think, in this La Liga season. And yeah, Benzema, Vinicius, you've just got to, as I say, take your hat off to them. But on to your moment of the week, Sam, which perhaps for us will be a little bit more cheery. What have you gone for?
I'm afraid it's not too cheery for you, Rory. I'm going to go with Chimi Avila and his last gasp equaliser for Osasuna. I mean, it was just a brilliant finish and so deserved for Osasuna, but also just because it was El Sadar. I mean, late equalisers or winners at El Sadar, we've seen a couple of them this season, but they're just magic. I mean, the atmosphere is fantastic. Chimi Avila, of all people, I mean, we all know what a cult figure Chimi Avila is. So for him to come off the bench, to create a finish like that, to get a result like that, that was a huge moment for me. I mean, maybe at the end of the season we'll look back on Karim Benzema's volley as the big moment, the iconic moment. But this weekend, the moment that I'm going to stick with is Chimi Avila's equaliser.
And with that, we draw to a close this Match Day 17 podcast. Thank you very much for your time, Sam, and for your analysis, particularly after racing home from the Bernabeu to attend.
Cheers, Ryan.
And yes, okay, Benzema's strike was probably the more iconic moment, I think, in the season, but it was absolute scenes at El Sadar. Not even a Barcelona fan can deny that. So we will play out on the sound of Chimi Avila's goal. Thank you to you, listener, for coming with us on this journey again through La Liga and Match Day 17. Follow us on at La Liga Lowdown on Twitter for more content to vote on our MVP. And also you'll see some sort of clips and videos from our contributors. But I will leave the stage to Chimi Avila to put Barcelona to the sword and send El Sadar wild.
Empuja el Sadar, viene el córner, viene Osasuna, viene Roberto Torres, es diestro, va desde la izquierda, la pone Torres, segundo palo, arriba la tiene Osasuna, Moncayo, la chuta, rechace, gol del Chimi, gol, 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 gol del Chimi, gol, 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 gol de Osasuna, gol. en una jugada, el rechazo en una segunda jugada tras un balón parado, en gatilla desde la frontal del área, el Chimi Ávila fusila la portería de Ter Stegen, a cuatro para el final, empate Osasuna, no hay nada firmado, no hay nada decidido, van a pasar cositas, Osasuna 2, Barça.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.